The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, one of the approaches to Buddhist spirituality, Buddhist practice, is to spend some time in reflection, meaning taking up certain topics to reflect on and consider their role and place in your own life and the life of our society. And one of the really key topics for reflection is called in the Buddhist language, sila. And sila is sometimes translated into English as ethics. I kind of prefer the English word virtue for it. I think that occasionally people associate it with morality, but the problem with the word morality is that I think some people here in the West interpret morality through the lens of obligation and duty, that somehow there's external standards that come that are given to you, and that you have to live by those standards as if, by some external authority that tells you this is how you should live your life. Whereas virtue feels more like, to me, like it comes from the inside. It has to do with the quality of character that a person has. And when a person has virtue, it means there's some kind of inner quality of goodness that comes through. And so they act on that virtue as opposed to acting on obligation. That's interesting that the ancient tradition of Buddhism and the commentaries about these things most strongly associates the word sila with the word harmony or cooperation. So that to live in harmony, one lives with sila, lives with virtue, lives with harmony with oneself, lives with harmony with the world around us. And also it's interesting that, as far as I can tell, the Buddha very seldom told people to be ethical, but rather when he talked about ethics, it was more as an expectation that if a person was a mature person, a good person, this is how they would behave. So there was a strong tendency in the ancient tradition to use ethics more as descriptions of what people would be like rather than prescriptions of thou shalt do this way. And so one of the most frequent teachings on sila for lay people down through the centuries in Buddhism is something called the five, in English it's called the five precepts. I'm not sure if precepts is the best translation of the Pali word, because the most common thing it's trying to translate is a term that literally means something like factors of training or steps in the training. So there's a little different feeling between precepts and aspects of training. This is how you would train yourself. And there are five of these, and they are not to harm. The literal meaning is not to strike out at people or at any living being. It's usually described as not to kill, but I believe it has a broader meaning. So not to harm, not to take what's not given, not to steal, not to engage in sexual misconduct, not to harm through our sexuality, not to lie, and not to take alcoholic drinks that cause you to be heedless, intoxicated, I suppose, but heedless. Here in the modern world, usually that's expanded out not just to mean alcoholic drinks, but also to mean drugs, any kind of substance that we take that causes heedlessness, causes us to act in ways that later we regret. And so those are the five that are held by the tradition. But in the time of the Buddha, those five were never given prescriptively. This is what you should do. But those five are listed there, but primarily listed descriptively, that this describes someone who's spiritually mature. And so there's a different feeling, I think, if you hear it that way. Because then the question is not so much how you should be ethical, but how you might become more mature. And then in that mature, and these are guidelines then, or supports, or a picture, an image of what spiritual maturity might look like. That it would be somewhat natural to live by the precepts, somewhat natural to express your life by not killing, not stealing, not harming through your sexuality, not lying, and not intoxicating yourself. So it has a different feeling. I think it has, that doesn't have the same feeling of weight, that there's this kind of heavy moral weight around being following the precepts that sometimes in the West people interpret, you know. And you know, now you're going to be a Buddhist. You have to kind of shape yourself into these precepts in order to be a good person. Otherwise, dire things will happen. Rather, the idea often in Buddhism is the idea: these are aspirations that we hope to live by, because it expresses our own innate goodness. One of the surprises for me in engaging in Buddhist practice was how some feeling of innate goodness or ethical integrity arose for me out of meditation practice. I was not particularly concerned with being ethical growing up. It was not really in my radar. I just happened not to be particularly unethical. So it wasn't like I was, you know, I did things that really I feel regret about. But most, but maybe it was lack of imagination. but it wasn't really on my radar that, you know, I should think about ethics or sila, or it wasn't really, you know, just a concern of mine. But then through meditation practice, there was developed a feeling of settledness and peacefulness and openness. Vulnerability, integrity, wholeness, a settled wholeness that was so, made such a big impression on me, because from that settled wholeness came a natural inclination to want to be ethical, to want to be compassionate, to want to be caring, to want to be generous, particularly to want to be someone who doesn't cause any harm in the world. And then my relationship to this sila, to these precepts, became different. I started having a relationship to them, because rather than thinking of them as, again, commandments that I should do this way, they became reference points for when I was in touch with this innate settled goodness or wholeness that I could feel. And if I feel that I'm going to violate or slide away from these five precepts, generally it's indication that I've lost touch with this settled wholeness that I can experience. And so the question is not should I or shouldn't I be ethical, it's more the question is should I or shouldn't I be in touch with my settled wholeness. And if I'm settled, if I'm connected to my wholeness, then this is how I would live my life, rather than So it kind of comes from the inside, as opposed to from the outside. Oh no, I have to kind of do these things, otherwise, you know, I'll look like a bad person and people won't like me, or lightning will strike, or something. So the idea of that it comes from the inside, and in fact, as I said earlier, the Buddha didn't actually prescribe the five precepts. You should do these things, but he did prescribe other ethical guidelines for ourselves, the first three are in this list of 10, called the 10 skillful actions. Again, here also they're called skillful actions, as opposed to, you know, commandments or precepts or obligation things. So the first three are it's skillful to act in ways that doesn't cause harm. It's skillful to act in ways that you don't take what's not given, you don't steal. It's skillful to act in ways that doesn't cause harm through your sexuality. And then it goes into four other items, which it has to do with speech. It's skillful not to lie. It's skillful not to speak in harsh ways. It's skillful not to speak in ways that are divisive. And it's skillful not to be slanderous. And then it goes into, this is what's particularly interesting, the last three of these ten, they're all inner qualities. Inner, rather than behavior in the world, have to do with ways we are. It's skillful not to be covetousness, not to be driven by greed. It's skillful not to have ill will. And it's skillful not to be deluded or ignorant about the path of freedom. So these inner capacities, inner qualities we develop. Another area, way in which you see that the sila thing comes very close to this inner kind of way, inner kind of how we are, is the close connection that tradition has between sila and wisdom. A beautiful teaching that just like you wash your hands, one hand washes the other, you need both hands, usually, so that wisdom and sila go hand in hand. That wisdom helps with the development of sila, and sila helps the development of wisdom. And so as we become more understanding and wise about this life, then it becomes more natural to be ethical. As we become more ethical, it's interesting then that it becomes more natural to be wise. And the reason for this is that wisdom in the tradition is usually defined as wisdom about what causes and what frees us from harm. The Buddhist tradition puts tremendous emphasis on this issue of harm, hurt, suffering. I like the word harm because harm is something that's done. And the fundamental kind of reference point in Buddhism for our behavior, for our life, to our path of freedom is based on this distinction between avoiding what causes harm and doing that which is beneficial and causes happiness and well-being. And so as we become more ethical, we have a reference point for better understanding what causes harm. One of the interesting understandings is that we understand that being unethical, generally, whoever, you might harm someone else in your unethical behavior, but you also harm yourself. And as we have this settled wholeness, or this greater integrity or well-being from our practice, it becomes more and more palpable, more and more a physical experience to see and understand how if you lie or kill or steal or do a variety of these unethical things, that you're also harming yourself. And it just doesn't feel good to do that. It also becomes clear that how you harm other people, because the more settled we are, the settled wholeness, the more sensitive we are, more empathy we have for others, and so we become naturally more caring. So these five precepts are used partly as to help with this reflection, partly as a mirror, partly as a guideline, not so strictly thou shalt behave this way, but rather as supports and guides for helping us consider, am I in touch with my settled wholeness? Am I losing touch with it? What is my relationship to myself, my life? What's motivating me now when I'm about to cross this line? I'm about to harm or to kill or strike out. What's going on here? Stop and take a deeper look when you're about to take what's not given. What are you doing here? What's really going on? What's operating? Is it greed that's operating? Is it fear that's operating? Is it wisdom? Is it generosity that's operating? To stop and look. So each of these five precepts become mirrors that we use to reflect upon ourselves, to see ourselves more deeply, and to kind of clarify what's really going on for us. So are we operating out of greed, out of hate, out of delusion in any given time. And the description of these precepts or these guidelines, the ancient tradition also tends to define them also in positive terms. It's not only a matter of not killing, but it's also the possibility of living in the world with compassion. It's not only a matter of not stealing, it's also a matter of living in the world with generosity. It's not only a matter of not harming through our sexuality, but it's also a matter of respect, of contentment, of care for each other. It's not only a matter of not lying, it's also a matter of speaking words that are beneficial and helpful. And the tradition talks about words that are conducive for harmony, bring concord, bring people together. It's not only a matter of avoiding intoxication, but it's also a matter of cultivating clarity, clear seeing for what is going on. So these are kind of the area of reflection, and reflection here means to spend time thinking about it, thinking about your relationship to each of the precepts, to the sila, to ethics. Are you ethical? Do you feel ethical? What's the role of ethics in your life? Are you interested in being ethical? What's the sources of ethics for you? Is there an inner reference point for being ethical? Like for me, the sense of settled wholeness was a reference point that was very important. So is there a reference point for you in this regard? I think this kind of reflection done carefully and well and consistently produces wisdom, greater self-understanding, and most important of all, I think it creates a motivation to be a better person. And I think that is a really great thing. The better person meaning someone who is better for the world. You become better. So those are my words of that to prompt some reflection. And then I thought that I would have you guys actually do it in small groups. And but this is what I thought would be the question. I thought maybe you can break into groups of three and four and discuss with your little group or describe in your little group someone that you've met through your lifetime who's inspired you for their integrity, for their ethical purity, that was really meaningful for you. Somehow maybe someone is growing up who inspired you or taught you something about the beautiful values of ethics, or someone as an adult that you met that really touched you. Wow, that makes a difference, and that's really impressive that a person can be that way. Has there been any person in your life that inspired you around their because of their ethics, their ethical integrity? And what are the qualities of that person? What was it that inspired you about that person? That's the topic for a discussion. For reflection. How does that sound? Yeah? And if you don't have anyone, then listen to the other people. Yeah?
I just had thought that possibly people who have trouble hearing in the noisy room, if they wanted to use the library, that would...
Great, okay. So some people have trouble, if a lot of people are talking at once in here, it gets kind of like a noisy, that you could spread out a little bit, including you can go into the conference room there, your small group can go in there, in the library. And we'll take about 10 minutes for this, and then we'll come back in the big group again and debrief on that. So it'd be nice if you can find groups of three and four and have your discussion. So perhaps a few of you, a couple of minutes, we could just hear from brief words what that was like to be part of that reflection. I wasn't part of any of the groups, so poor me, didn't benefit from any of it. So anything anyone want to share?
What struck me was that oftentimes the qualities I admire in someone else are like, I envy that. You know, I look at it as like, oh, I should be like that, or I'm less than that. And I got that I could convert that into inspiration and admiration and aspiration instead of, you know, so I'm less than and they're better, like comparing.
Great, thank you. That was wonderful to hear. In the back row.
I'm not sure if I'm going to express this well enough, but I think as a result of your talk, and then of the three of us talking, I had this upwelling of kind of, I don't know what to call it. It was just such a beautiful thing because we're so surrounded by violence, by horrible news, by bad people, bad actions, that just hearing these stories, it just filled me with the realization that there's some wonderful things here that are safe and beautiful and not for glory, not for front page news, just coming from within beautiful people. And I just thank you so much for today.
Great, thank you. It would be nice if more of this was on the front page.
Our discussion sort of meandered until it got to the thought about what is it like to be an ethical person in an unethical environment, and what do you do? How do you thrive in that, or how do you continue in that? And
great.
And you know, even Buddha and the monks went off into the forest somewhere to get away from all the princes and whatnot. What is the best approach?
Uh-huh.
Not going into the forest.
Yeah, I'm not sure he went into the forest exactly. He lived often for much of his life right on the interface between the forest and the cities and the princes and the kings. So, you know, it was kind of on the edge. And perhaps people who are really ethical are a little bit outside of some of the popular currents of culture. But it's a great question you have of how do we live ethically in an unethical world? Because chances are it's mostly what we have to do anyway. That's what it's called on. You know, there aren't that many societies that stay ethical for very long.
So I had the related but opposite question. I was brought up more or less, not in an extreme way, but actively to be unethical. quite actively, actually. And I spent most of my life thinking that was the way to be. And it's a relatively recent phenomenon to be surrounded by this idea of ethics and ethical behavior and that it's a virtue. It's just an interesting view.
Great. I appreciate hearing that. And since now it's been a new thing kind of for you to be around virtue and the value of it, what have you learned?
Sure.
Have you become more ethical?
I have become more ethical. Actually, I guess what I've learned is that being ethical comes quite naturally.
Just it does now, or just a coincidence that it does now? Because you're older?
Well, there's always the question. Not always, but often the question comes up. Maybe I should do this differently.
So
the question often arises.
So what's changed for you is now you question what you're doing and wonder if there are different ways than the usual ways in the past.
Well. Yes, and that's a very revealing question that arises.
Right, I think it's fantastic. Wonderful, thank you for that. So maybe one more?
Okay. We in our group, we talked a little bit about negative influences and how there can be people in our lives, in addition to the people with integrity, there are people in our lives that have seem to be very maybe subtle, maybe driven by greed or subtly deluded, but very effective and very. So I experience ethics as being like the opposite of what you say, living outside, being an outsider. I mean, I see what your point is, but when the way I experience it is like ethical transgressions kind of let me be a rebel, or that's kind of like a way of expressing like power, you know, a sort of a power dynamic or fighting a power dynamic. So like being unethical is a way of being like not such an underdog or not totally powerless.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's one of the reasons why people rebel. So to assert themselves or to react against something is already unethical, an ethical society, and people rebel against it in a variety of unethical ways. The question is it really wise to do that, or is there a wiser way of asserting oneself, a wiser way of finding oneself in contrast to a society or a group of people that are oppressing you or causing problems? So I said we would do one more, so maybe we should stop. And that was great. Thank you for participating in that. And I hope that this gave you some topics for reflection. And maybe during the course of the week you could reflect on sila, this ethics virtue issue in your life. And I think it's really great to have people to talk to about these topics. So if there's some friends or someone in your family or someone, total strangers that you can go up to and wherever it's safe and continue these reflections with someone else, that's a great thing to do. And so now we have our second Sunday of the month, tea. So those of you who'd like to stay, please stay and introduce yourself some more to people and enjoy the tea and the cookies, and have a wonderful week. Thank you.